This is an interview between Alyssa Nielsen, N-I-E-L-S-E-N, and Edith Taylor, and it's conducted on Friday, November 18th, in Victoria. So I'm just going to start asking you a few questions. Let's start with where and when were you born?
I was born in Nottingham, England, on the 23rd of November, 1923.
Okay. So how old were you when World War II broke out?
16.
Okay.
Started in 1939, and I was born in
16. So could you tell me a little bit about your experience during the war?
That's very bad. Anyway, at first I was working first at Benswear, which makes children clothing and knitwear and everything like that. And then I was at Boots, the cash chemist in England, when I joined up. I used to go on a bus to Beeston, outside of Nottingham, and we used to sing war songs and things on the bus in the mornings going home. And then they gave us an ultimatum. We either had to go into a munitions factory or join up. So I joined the Air Force. And I went away to square bashing camp in Metro, where you do all your square bashing and get your uniform and all that, learn your discipline. And then I was on barrage balloons first. I went to Newcastle. And I was on barrage balloons on the Clyde, on the Tyne. Put them on the rivers, you know, and things like that. Ports. So I was on one and on the Tyne. And then I went up to Scotland and was on a barrage balloon on the Clyde, where the shipbuilding is going on. Then the war changed from us, it went to us going over to there. So they didn't need the barrage balloons quite so much, so they remustered us. And they gave you exams to find out what you were capable of doing. And I found out, and they put me, went to instrument repairing. Went to this school and everything to learn to be an instrument repairer. Where we did instruments in the cockpit, we did gun sights, bomb sights, astrographs, oxygen, everything. And so we had to learn to do all these things. And then I went to OTU, which is Operational Training Unit, where they train the crews to go on to raids. They train them there, is where I was, on Wimpies, which are Wellington bombers, but we called them Wimpies. And this is where I met Ken, is when he was on OTU. And I met Arlie and Ken. At first, they were best friends. His name was Arlie. We called him Carl. He wanted to be named Carl. And I went with Carl first, and I was going with him for a few months. And he asked me to marry him. And we were discussing, etc. But he was killed, his aircraft. And so anyway, that wasn't to be. But Ken then, they best friends. And so Ken said that, would I go out with him? So I said, yes, I would, and everything. And we had arranged to get married. And then his father died in Canada, and his mother couldn't handle the things. So he had to come home to Canada. And while he was home, the war ended. I'm really skipping over it, aren't I? The war ended, and so I came here, and we were married here, because the arrangement all went kaflooey. War is not an easy thing to talk about. Bombing raids every night, fires and destruction and whole streets gone while you're in an air raid shelter, and you come out the next morning and it's disastrous. You can't explain it. You can't explain it. It's very bad. I remember also people in London, where whole streets and streets and streets would be gone. they were putting people in the underground railways during to live down there. A lot of the people in London lived in the tube stations. They had bunk beds on the stations, tiered up, you know. And people had a gas ring or a power ring to cook on and everything. And they lived there. They went to work from there. They went to school from there. That was their home. They had no homes. And this is where everything went on. And so the tube stations were full of people living there all the time. It's really dark. It's not a conversation to talk about. And at my age, I'd rather not remember it.
Yeah, it sounds like a very hard experience.
It is. It's hard explaining to someone else. The Russians were very, very small. We had 2 ounces of butter per person per week. We had 4 ounces of margarine per person. 4 ounces of meat, 2 ounces of cheese, 1 egg per person per week, which you didn't make a cake with, you had some bread with it. I remember before I joined up, taking beet sandwiches, pickled beet sandwiches to work. And when you opened the package in the morning, it was all red, you know, all the bread was red, and very unappetizing, but what else was there? We had bread and dripping, which is the fat taken from any meat, you know, because we didn't have any butter or margarine left, so you took bread and dripping. There was lots and lots of different things we ate. My dad had a garden, so we had veggies, things like that, which we had to fill up with. But the people were very healthy. Candy was short and everything, so the children didn't fill up on candy at all. Oranges we never saw because a lot of the boats got bombed before they got to from places like Africa or somewhere like that. Shiploads of good food and things like that got U-boated or bombed or whatever. They didn't reach England with all, a lot of supplies gone. It's the same with anything. I remember oranges were just on children's ration books, so that if you had children in the family, you could get an orange for them, probably once every 6 months or something like that. They were a real pleasure.
Could you describe that ration book system to me? Like, you got tickets, and then how did you get
your
rations?
You had coupon a book with your ration coupons in. And you could only go to one grocer because he had your rations. You couldn't shop anywhere. So you took your basket and your ration book and your money and you took it to the grocer and he gave you what you could have. And if you wanted a can of salmon 1 week, you couldn't have a can of fruit. And if you wanted a can of fruit, well, you couldn't have a can of fish. They were interchangeable. And the grocer could just let you have what you could have. You couldn't say, I want this or I want that or anything else. The stores in England during the war didn't have anything in their windows. They had a plant, or they had a picture of Churchill, or they had a map or something. But there was nothing in store windows.
And why was that?
Well, there wasn't enough to put anything in the store windows. The rations were for people, and staying with clothing. Clothing was on ration. So, anyway, store windows in England during the war had a picture of Churchill or a picture of the king or something like that. Or a plant. And everything in the windows. So no good going through the shopping. And those kind of things, but we were healthy. when I went on leave from the Air Force, my mother liked it, but my brother and I were on leave because we got a little more on our rations than they did. So it worked out very well. She liked that. And I had a brother in the Air Force and myself and my sister in the Marines, which is the Navy. And so she liked us coming on leave. My younger sister and my brother were still at home.
So how did you enjoy your work with the military? How did you enjoy that? How did you interact with
I liked, once I got kind of used to it, you have to get used to it very much. You live, I think it's a good thing, if you like it. You learn to live with all different different personalities, people with different personalities. You only have a bed space. You have one of those little cots and a cupboard at the top end of the bed, and that is your home. You have this little cot and this thing, that's your bed space. And every Friday night, we had what they called kit inspection. Okay, so that the WAF officers came around, you had put all your kit out on your head, bed had to be made specially, had to pass inspection. And you put all your kit out on your bed so that she could check what all you had, if you had anything missing. Some of them sold their stuff wrong. And you had all that stuff, and she inspected your stuff and whether your place was neat and all that kind of thing. You shampooed your hair on Friday night because, you see, you were confined to camp that night. So you couldn't go out anywhere, but that isn't to say that we didn't. Anyway, after she'd gone, there'd be all kinds of couples down the trees, down the road. But anyway, but that was what we called a mommy night. A mommy was a shampoo at that time. And so you did your shampoo and you did your laundry and you did all those kind of things on Friday nights, because that's confined to camp then. So that was all part of the discipline. I think, too, that this discipline you get in the forces stays with you. It's ingrained at that time. And to me, nowadays, I think that today's youth should be conscripted into the forces between 17 and 19. And I think it would help a lot of the youth that can't find themselves, instead of doing all this graffiti and vandalism and things like that goes on. It would teach them to learn to live with all kinds of different personalities. And you do this in a hut. There was 30 girls in a hut. So there's a lot of different personalities.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you'd have to lay out your kit, and some women sold part of theirs.
Different things. Well, very often the people wanted it as keepsake. We caught the bloomers that they issued us. I don't know if you know anything about these old fleece-lined bloomers that we used to wear in English schools for gym, for PT, or what you call it, or whatever. They were long bloomers, you know, almost down to these fleece-lined bloomers. They were navy blue. And we called them passion killers. But anyway, so a lot of these passion killers that were out on the bed had never been worn, because we wore our own undies. You know, we'd buy our own and bring our own undies in that were much better than these passion killer things. Anyway, so some of those people thought that they would make good keepsakes. And you'd often pay for them, and then you'd go to the store hut, and say that they'd worn out, or you'd lost them, or something like that, and get another pair, etc. So this is what I mean by trading them or whatever. But anyway, I still had my passion colours. They were all nice and big, brand new, you know. Anyway, and of course we wore black stockings, and I never could get used to high heels again, because we wore flat service shoes all the time we were in there, and I'm still not a high heel fan. And so everything was issued, and I hated the hats. When we got a new hat. They were they were a mess. Anyway, I don't know if you saw my hat. I don't think I've got any pictures of it. I'll look it off there. We used to fill them full of beer and mess them all up and everything, and then empty the beer out and then put your tin hat and respirator on the top of this thing to mould it so that it got brand new.
It sounds like you got up to a lot of stuff in the process.
Everyone didn't think of another one would.
So you mentioned a little bit earlier that some people would go out after curfew. So how was this received? Well, did anybody ever get in trouble for this?
No, nobody snitched on anybody. Yeah, you never would. And your boyfriend or whatever, you knew that Friday nights were a mommy night, you know, was tit inspection. They called it tit inspection. Anyway, so they would wait outside and everything, and then our Nissan huts were always a long way away from the mints. Always. They always put them away from the rest of the camp. Ours were away. So the guys would come out and walk over and everything and wait for you behind a tree. And if you wanted to go out and see your boyfriend, you could go out and see it for a little while and everything. And after the wife officer would come.
Wow.
I mean, so did you ever do all these things, you know? I mean, really.
So did you either do this with either Carl or Ben?
With Ken, his name was. Ken, yes, I saw him a couple of times down on the road. There was a long driveway with trees on each side down to our hut. And the local pub is where weren't in cities, you know. We were mostly out on aerodromes, on camps out of town, because you couldn't get an aerodrome in the town. Anyway, our training places and things like that were always out of town. So there was country pubs, and all these people they knew us, you see, in the country part, and they would really welcome us in their pubs. I remember at one place, I think that was when I was in training when I was doing that instrument bashing course. Where we were during the war, beer and things were rationed too, and the ration would come to the pub, whatever. Down south in southern England, their drink was cider, and there was rough and smooth cider. And don't ask me what the difference is, because I don't know. But anyway, it's fermented apple juice, okay, and it makes this drink. When we went, there were six of us girls when we went to this pub first, and the guys, the local guys, the countrymen, all were in there, and they said, we don't get beer here, we aren't issued beer, this is apple juice. Come along, girls, this is just apple juice. So anyway, we just thought this was apple juice. So we were drinking this apple juice, and when we got up to go to the toilet, the floor came up and met us. We were just absolutely just stunned on this. We were drunk on this apple juice, whatever. And these guys got a big kick out of this, these older local guys, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's only apple juice, girls, only apple juice. And we were just drunk on this stuff. We had a heck of a time getting home. We used to have to cross the fields, you know, to go, because we didn't have any transportation, so we used to walk across the fields, and we had quite a time.
Did you ever get in trouble for any of the stuff you did?
Oh yeah, well I got jackers and all that kind of stuff, all kinds of things. But anyway, when you got caught or anything, you went on the mat, as we called it, and you had to go in front of the WAF officer, and she meter out the punishment. If it was very bad, you got some, and if it wasn't too bad, she'd just admonish you. You know, just tell you not to do that again or something like that.
So what kind of punishment would you get?
Confined to camp. You have to go in the kitchen and peel potatoes or carrots or whatever, and all that kind of jazz. Wash dishes or collect dishes. Any jobs that the men gave us the dirty jobs, because they didn't like having females in the forces in the first place. they always resented having females in the force, as you know. And so we got the dirty jobs, whatever.
Were there women that rebelled against that? Against the men giving them the dirty jobs?
What else could you do? No, you were already on penalty. No, there was nothing you could do about it. Absolutely nothing. You did as you were told. So, but that isn't what we called a Muslim when we were outside the camp, the purple or something like that. If they wanted us to play dodge, we wouldn't do it. Or if they wanted us to do something else, you don't have to take any notice of them when you're not on camp.
Yeah.
Okay, so we could tell them to just go to heck. Anyway,
could you tell me about meeting your husband?
Well, I met him at one of these pubs. There was Arlie and Ken, and I went with Arlie first, and then I went with Ken afterwards, after Arlie was killed. I went to Arlie's funeral, which was very bad. I can't hear the last posts of Arlie anymore without it upsetting me. And then I met Ken, and we went together and everything. Very, very, very nice man. Very gentle, so very nice. So he told me that when he came out of the Air Force, he wanted to farm. So I just didn't give that any thoughts at all. I thought it would be like a farm in England. Well, farms in England are lovely, you know, close to the cities, and they have everything and all that kind of stuff. So that I never ever gave it a thought that when I came to Canada and went on this farm with no power and no water or anything, I didn't even think about it at all. But boy, when I got there, and I was in northern Alberta at Merthorpe, which is now famous, I was the talk of the neighborhood for 2 years. With all the neighbors, what this green English girl was either doing or not doing. And they told me after they got to know me, they told me that you should talk about me and all these stupid things that I would do because I wasn't used to the neighborhood. And doing chores at 40 below, I had never been used to. You have to thaw the pump before you can get the water, you know. Because you have a coal and wood stove and you have something on there all the time with water boiling or something, so you have to take out some of this water, take it out and pour it over the pump before you can get the water. I was the running water. I ran the water in and I ran the water out. And in the winter time, you could put out 2 or 3 garments onto the line before your fingers froze. And then you came in, and then you did 3 or 4 more and everything. And then when you went to get them in again, you broke them off the line. You just absolutely broke them off. And then you could stand them up inside here. And then you get them. They would stand up, you know, and everything before you put them on the drying rack. And you bend them and put them on the drying rack and put them close to the stove before, so that they would thaw and dry up.
Wow.
But you put them out so that you freshen them up, you know, the diapers and things. We had diapers then, you know, not these modern things. And I never used it. I had diapers that I washed and dried. It took 30 pails of water 3 times a week to do my laundry, and I had a hand thing, you know. Ken got me a tub thing with a handle thing that I pushed back and forth. At first, I didn't, when it was just he and I just did it in a wash bowl. I just did a wash bowl thing.
And was that a lot different than how you'd lived in England?
Oh, heavens, yes, yes, yes.
So what were the differences? What were the main differences between?
Well, we had power and water and all those things in England. I lived in a proper house and everything. My father worked on the buses. My father was a conductor. Buses. And then he lost his arm. He had a war wound from 1914 and it went gangrene, so he had his arm off. So they put him on regulating the buses. So anyway, he had a good job and So, oh yes, we had everything. And to come where there was nothing and do your winter chores at 40 below in the winter time isn't funny.
So how did you adjust? Who taught you how to live in Canada?
Oh. Which is why I was the talk of the neighborhood, trying to learn how to do these things. I didn't have any furniture. I had orange crates and things like that for cupboards. And, you know, you have orange crates with a dish towel at the front to cover it up and everything. Oh, I have to tell you about my first thrashing crew. Okay, I didn't know anything about this. But the neighbors get together and help each other to do their crops. Okay, so they all get together and they go on what they call these thrashing crews. So they'd be on your place, say 2 days, 2 full days, sometimes 3 days. And they come at 5:30 for their breakfast. You take the noon meal out because they don't stop, and then they come in for their supper. Now, I didn't know anything about this, and nobody told me about this. So I had my wedding presents. I had put a white tablecloth on the table, and I had put out cups and saucers and plates, and the cutlery all in arranged things like we do in England, proper table settings, etc., etc. And when the men came in, our first crop had smut, which is a kind of a black sooty thing that gets on the grain, so that the men were all looked like chimney sweeps with all this black stuff. And so they came in and they took one look at this table and all gasped. Anyway, they had never seen anything like this, you see, or laid it out with glasses and everything. And I had put out white towels and all my... Well, they washed in a little basin, you know, just a little basin bowl thing, on this orange crate. And all they did was dip their hands in, splash it on their face, and then wipe it on my towel. So that they were completely black. And when they had finished the meal and got up, they not one cup was on the saucer, the cup was on the table, they had used the saucer as an ashtray, and they had not used the glasses at all. And each side of each plate were black marks on the table from where their arms had rubbed up and down my tablecloth. Well, this was the talk of the neighborhood for months and months and months. The lady then from half a mile south of me, Mary, came up and helped me at the next meal and showed me what I was supposed to do for a thrashing crew, which was entirely different. You don't put a tablecloth on. You leave the table, the wood, as it is. You just put the dishes on, just there, sparse, you know. And you gave them a mug, not a cup of saucer. You gave them a mug, and they just needed a fork and a knife and none of the, and no glasses, not to drink out of it. Anyway, I learned a lot, and you put your darkest towels out, etc., for them to wash and wipe off, because they just dip their hands in and splashed it on their face and they wiped it on your towel. Anyway, I learned a lot.
I can imagine.
I learned a lot that first year.
And how were you received by the community that you moved to? How did the rest of the community feel about you?
They thought I was fun. They thought I was fun. Shall I put it? Not fun. Funny. Some of them were Ukrainian. And some were Polish. Some had been there all the time. And thought I was very different. Very different. Anyway... After a while, I used to go to lectures in the town to find out different things about garden, about the garden and the growing, etc., etc. And so a couple of years, no, it would be the next year, a couple of years, three of the neighbors came and said, how come your garden looks like that? Ours don't look like that. your stuff is growing beautifully. What are you doing? So I said, did you go to the lectures to find out all the new types of seed they have for this area and all the different ways of doing things? Oh, we don't go to those kind of lectures or anything like that. We just keep our own seed and do our own thing. I said, well, maybe that's why mine looks like this and yours doesn't. Because I went to find out all about this, and I've been doing as they said. Yours looks absolutely great. Ours don't look like that at all. I said, well, I'm willing to learn, so I went to find out. And I had good gardens. I had wonderful gardens. And so, anyway, I gradually learned to fit in, shall we put. And my husband was very well thought of. We belonged to the Legion. My husband was the president of the Legion. He was the president of the co-op. He was the secretary-treasurer of the church. He was secretary-treasurer of the telephone association once we got it. He was also the cubmaster. So he was